Hi, this is Terry Kuzma at Penn State University for the NAC Center, and I'd like to present Unit 5, Micro and Nanomaterials and Bioapplications. This is a Lecture 4 on biocompatibility and cellular overview. So we've gone through this outline so far, and we've checked off these issues in the first three iterations of the lectures, and right now we're going to take a look at metal nanoparticles and then evolve into, you know, a cousin of that, which are pretty revolutionary nanoshells. And then we're going to look at some other uses of metals for bio nano applications and then wrap up this Unit 5. So metal nanoparticles, since the size of nanoparticles is comparable to biomolecules, these nanoparticles can overcome biological barriers. Nanoparticles might be 1/10,000 of the size of a cell. The cell might uptake the nanoparticles as a result of being tricked into thinking nanoparticles are a biomolecule, such as an enzyme or an antibody. The shape of the nanoparticles has impact, generally gap junctions, which allow materials to go in and out of a cell, except round shapes more than rods. So if we had a 100 nanometer particle shaped like this, a sphere, a cell might take it in. If we had something shaped like this, 100 nanometer, round on the end, rod probably wouldn't go into the cell. So, actually the shape has a lot to do with the uptake. So gold is often used as the metal of choice for metal nanoparticles biologically because it has been shown to be relatively inert, and gold is a good platform to tether chemistry to the particle. So things like thiol sticks, so a polymer with a sulfur head on there, like a lollipop with the candy part being sulfur and the polymer tail being the stick on a lollipop, they stick rather well to gold. So that's often the first step to be able to functionalize a gold nanoparticle to send it to a specific site or to hide it from uptake of the body. So gold per se, on the market, it's rather expensive in the bulk, but as a nanoparticle, it's relatively irrelevant because by weight, we're using hardly any gold. We're just using it for its ability to target things. Metal nanoparticles can be used to target and destroy cells. There are different functionalities of the particles to perform selected tasks. They can be used as tags to identify. They could be used as energy receptors to cook tumors, and they could be used as a delivery system to tether things like drugs or RNA. So just like liposomes, they could be multifunctional and do a lot of things. We would have the metal nanoparticle as a base platform, like a pickup truck, and what we put in that pickup truck or how we would drive it to or deliver it or target it to is different than how we would actually treat the metal nanoparticle. So gold nanoparticles can be used as a marker to delineate between healthy tissue and tumors. In this role, the gold nanoparticles are coated with a ligand that will preferentially adhere to tumor cells. These gold nanoparticles are grown to a specific size, so they'll exhibit plasmon resonance, so they'll actually glow underneath some light excitation. A light source is used to stimulate the plasmons during surgery to give a surgeon a clear boundary between healthy tissue and tumors. This allows the surgeon to minimize trauma to the healthy tissue and locate unhealthy regions. So this is brilliant because there's always an issue when the surgeon goes in, they kind of lean on the side of taking out too much healthy tissue because they don't want to leave any carcinogenic tissue within the body. And certainly that's not a good idea because there's probably repercussions from cutting out healthy tissues such as healing time or permanent damage to the patient. So this allows surgery to be less invasive. So nanoparticles are inert in vivo, so the side effects are limited or non-existent. At least that's the thoughts today. Gold nanoparticles are relatively non-reactive, and they can be coated with a pegylated system like the we talked about before, so that they're very good at moving through the circulatory system in a stealth mode. So just how we would pegylate liposomes so the body would not recognize them, we can do the same thing with a gold nanoparticle so that they could actually circulate in the the body longer. So smaller particles from 100 to 100 nanometers are more apt to penetrate a tumor in the case if we were trying to target some type of cancer because of the EPR effect, as you recall, that we discussed in Lecture 3. So gold nanoparticles are not good at keeping light in an excited state. So when illuminated with light, they can actually give off energy as heat. So we're going to use this tenet to actually cook cancer. Selective antibodies can be and or attached to gold nanoparticles. So they're designed to lock onto receptors on a cancer cell. Up to 150 types of antibodies can be conjugated to gold nanoparticles through this pegylation process and targeted to specific tumors. So these things, excuse me, readily exist. I didn't know if I had it in the slide. I just looked through the slide there. You can look at these bifunctional pegylated linkers with the antibodies on them, and you can go to places like Sigma Aldrich, and they sell these in their catalog. So you can see that these are readily available and certainly are, you know, commercially available, state-of-the-art types of things. So this isn't, a guess at what's going to happen in the future. This is current technology. So let's take a look at what we're doing here. We have these antibodies. They're a class of proteins that specifically recognize foreign agents in the body and tag them for removal. Large libraries of slightly different antibodies are used to probe for a vast array of threats. Hundreds are commonly commercially available. And then they generally have this Y shape. So these are the recognition domains. And at least in my head, or I discuss with the students, I always say they're like selective Velcro. They would stick to a certain area, you know. So I think that's the analogy I use the most for the students. So selection of the antibody is made so that healthy cells will have low level of this receptor. And then the gold nanoparticles, we selectively seek out the cancer cells. So by illuminating gold nanoparticles with light, they give off a heat estimated to be to 70 to 80 degrees C. And this local heating results in the local ablation of cancer cells, which have been targeted by this high amount of nanoparticles that stick to the cell by this receptor interaction. So that's really brilliant. Again, you can see these things on YouTube. Look them up. I'd include the YouTube things inside the presentation. But YouTube changes so much and sites get taken down, et cetera. So it's best just to do a search for them, because then that way it's current. And certainly these things are in vogue and you'll always be able to find them on YouTube. So this just shows a picture of what's happening before, how we would actually target these nanoparticles selectively in the area. So the heating is based on a known optical plasmon resonance of gold in a near-infrared region. This therapy is currently in phase one clinical trials. So we can take near-infrared, and we don't have to have, you know, it's a rather benign to the rest of the body. And what we can do is shine near-infrared into an area that's has a high concentration of these metal nanoparticles that are tuned to pick up that, and then what they're going to do is cook the tumor. So through these are highly effective for superficial tumors, but the near infrared is not suited for deeper cancers because of the limited penetration depth. So if we would take near infrared light and shine it on a person, it would actually only go down to about 3 centimeters, effectively 3 centimeters or so, because it's going to get absorbed by the rest of the tissue in the body. So this sounds good, you to use near infrared and the ability for the nanoparticle to act like a tank circuit and gather that energy and then use that energy and turn it into heat and cook the tumor. The issue is the near infrared actually gets taken up by the rest of the body. But what we're going to do is look at this limitation, and this limitation has been addressed with another type of nanoparticle that we're going to look at later in the presentation. So this is good for tumors and things that are near the top of the body, the skin. But when tumors are deeper, like in the brain, et cetera, this wouldn't be good. But luckily, somebody's been able to tune some type of particle, and that would solve this issue of the near-infrared absorption of the body, or the natural tendency for near-infrared absorption. So another non-gold alternative material that uses a heated magnetic nanoparticle such as dextran-coated oxide, iron oxide particles. This method uses an inductively coupled magnetic field for an energy source. However, the high concentrations needed for iron oxide for adequate heat therapy can only be achieved by direct injection. So we couldn't use the process that we looked at, the EPR effect, that we would put in liposomes or metal nanoparticles within the bloodstream, and the leakiness of the tumor would selectively uptake that. This is just if they would find a tumor, they can take a syringe and actually insert this magnetic nanoparticles within the tumor and then heat it up that way. Certainly it's very viable, but limited, and certainly limited to rather large tumors. For small tumors, which could be as big as the needle itself, then that would be rather hard to do by direct injection techniques. So that's where the EPR effect and selective uptake due to the damage that exists within the cancer cell structure comes into play. So for smaller tumors, that EPR effect is really critical. So blood and tissue absorb most wavelengths of light, so that absorbs green, blue, and red. However, wavelengths that are invisible to the eye, such as certain ranges in the infrared region, will penetrate with minimal absorption. So they call this the water window. So we would have this spectrum within the lower portion of the infrared, and we're able to shine that completely or very far into a patient. The problem here is now that we have this energy spectrum, we need to design a particle that would actually be tuned to capture that energy spectrum. So it would be like the proper antenna, the resonant tuning for that. So luckily, people have been working on this, and what they did is they invented these things called gold nanoshells. So the nanoshells are manufactured to capture the infrared waves and convert them to heat. Tuning is done by varying the inner silica core and the thickness of the gold shell. So it kind of resembles an M&M with the thickness of the diameter of the chocolate on the inside and the thickness of that candy coating on the outside of the M&M. Mm-hmm. So when you would vary those in this gold nanoparticle scenario, you're going to vary what they would absorb, what frequency they would absorb. So naturally, the engineers and scientists have designed these nanoshells so they absorb this infrared so that they can go deeper in the body. So the key innovation with nanoshells is that we can tune their color from the visible and the dimensions of the core and the shell, the different regions of the spectrum. So the particles can be tuned to the near-infrared region of the spectrum. Biomedical engineers call this the water window, as I mentioned before, because we're mostly made out of water, and the water's mostly transparent in this region of the light spectrum. So now they've shown that the light can penetrate as deep as 10 centimeters, depending on a tissue type. So before we had high hopes for maybe 3 centimeters, so this goes about 3 times as deep as those other techniques that we showed for conventional gold nanoparticles. So the physics of the structure are unique. The gold nanoparticles are unique, which allow the particle to absorb and scatter different wavelengths compared to other solid spheres. For example, solid gold nanoparticles will absorb green light. However, an aura shell, which is the commercial name of a gold nanoshell, can be designed to absorb different wavelengths, including the near-infrared. Because light in the near-infrared will penetrate through the tissue, nanoparticles designed to absorb the infrared have the enabled new therapies and diagnostic applications. So these gold nanoshells differ from conventional gold nanoparticles that are limited to about 2 to 3 centimeters of access by light radiation. So we extended that with the gold nanoshells to 10 centimeters or so. This treatment is done with a very simple handheld laser. The nanoshells absorb the light and convert it into heat. It's extremely efficient. And the time for this light to kill the cancer cells in the tumor is about 3 minutes or so. Additionally, nanoshells, which are non-toxic, progress through the bloodstream to the tumor site, and unlike conventional drugs, they don't leave a toxic trail. So they're really relatively inert to the system and show less non-ideal properties for the cancer patients. So this shows you the nano shell or cartoon of it. Again, to me at least, it resembles a M&M, maybe a peanut M&M for that one. They're rounder. So this what we show here is the variable thickness of the gold coating and the variable diameter of the inner core. So this shows the coating. And as we would vary the size, when they, and again, these are, you know, these nanoparticles are as big as a virus. When they're creating these and they control this diameter and they control the coating diameter on here, we're able to shift the wavelength at will. So this shows the diameter of the particles and it shows the absorption. So this particle would absorb in around, you know, whatever it is, you know, 1,000 some nanometers. And this one would be, you know, whatever, 725 nanometer absorption. So we can actually tune these particles. So as an electrical engineer, I see this as brilliant, you know, because we always look at things like, you know, tank circuits and Maxwell's equations and the antennas, et cetera. So these things are really, you know, I give credit to the people that developed these things, because why they would be brilliant is because they're rather obvious, you know, like all good inventions, making a tuned circuit so they would capture things within the patient is just brilliant. So, you know, one of the people that are certainly credited for this is this Naomi Hallis. She's a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Rice University. She's known as the inventor of these aura shells, these nano shells. And again, you know, YouTube changes, but she has a lot of things on YouTube. She's a really nice speaker. I think she has her own YouTube channel where she's interviewed, et cetera. She was on a, you know, conventional TV like the Discovery Channel and, you know, I think 2020 or something, shows like that. So, you know, she's in the mainstream TV because her invention is so important. So she's a really nice mentor down there at Rice University. So I encourage you to go to YouTube, type in her name, and look at some of the things that are of interest to her that she's providing for society. So she you know, patented these nanoshells, aura shells. And they're a novel classification of optically tuned nanoparticles, consist of a dielectric core surrounded by a thin gold shell that can scatter, absorb energy dependent on the wavelength. So these particles themselves could be used for imaging. So if they're scattering the energy, you know, through light emission, you could use them to see where tumors exist, et cetera. Or we could use them to actually to capture the light energy. And once they do that, they would give off heat, and we could use this for heat ablation of tumors. So they could be used in two roles. So passive targeting, tumor targeting is also possible due to nonspecific accumulation of nanoshells at the tumor site. Again, done by the EPR effect that we discussed multiple times in this presentation. So again, just as a reminder, the tumor vasculature is more leaky than normal blood cells. So this allows the nanoshells to accumulate in the tumor preferentially to the rest of the body. And once the aura shells are located, or nanoshells are located within the tumor preferentially, that would give us selective imaging of the tumor compared to the rest of the body. Or what we could do is apply the specific radiation and actually cook that tumor compared to the rest of the body. So again, very nice work. So Hallis, West, and co-workers at Rice University have shown possible complement to radiation and chemotherapy in cancer therapy, wherein once nanoparticles or cancer site can be heated up into response to skin-penetrating near-infrared laser. So a nanoparticle can offer both diagnostic therapeutic capabilities and photothermal energy. So this dual imaging therapy emanated targeted nanoshells have been used to detect and destroy breast carcinoma cells such as HER2 that we discussed earlier, I think in presentation one in this series. So this is a quote in an interview with Naomi Hallis, Dr. Hallis, at Rice University. And what they did is they had a study in mice where they actually, an initial trial, where they applied these nanoshells to cancer, to mice that specifically are raised to have tumors. So in mouse studies, this is Naomi talking, in mouse studies were able to observe complete remission of all tumors within 10 days. There were two controlled groups of mice, and these mice are specifically bred to have tumors, and their tumors were all continued to grow very drastically until their end. But the mice that were treated with the nanoshells in this controlled study survived the study. The study was actually a 60-day survivability test, again, because these mice are designed to have cancer. These are considered long-term survivability. Well, at the end of the study, there were 100% survivability, and that survivability persisted. The test was done in 2003, and it's almost 2 years later, so it looks like these mice will be dying of old age. So out of curiosity, I actually went to, you know, Google, did a search, and, you know, mice live at different times, and these mice are, I guess, a good word is fatigue. They're meant, you know, they're bred to have cancer in them. But a white mouse will live about a year or two. So, and they could live longer than that. But these mice are literally dying of old age. Mice don't live for 50 years. Mice live for a year or two, usually, and certainly lab mice, when they live that long, is a lot. So these are very lucky mice to stay alive for 2 years, and certainly with 100% of the mice in the study dying of the tumor and 100% survivability, that's incredible. So things really never work out this way. You know, this is fantastic results and really encouraging. And certainly they use these, they have these in clinical trials right now. So this is another look at metal nanoparticles. So with the success with the aura shells and everything, I'd like to show another nanoparticle. And these are done at Syracuse Laboratory. So this professor uses light excitation to actually release concentrations of an anti-tumor drug directly in a tumor. So what he does is he takes these gold nanoparticles of about 15 nanometers in diameter, and he actually coats them with this red death, this doxorubicin. And what he's going to do is selectively send these 15 nanometer particles laced with doxorubicin to the tumor. And again, the uptake is due to the EPR effect. So this is what it looks like. We have this gold nanoparticle in here, you know, 15 nanometers or so. And then we have this red death tethered on here. Probably this is some type of thiol that they connect the red death to. And then they're going to send it through the EPR effect into the tumor. And then what they're going to do, they might heat up. I propose that they heat up this and then cut these bonds in here and then deliver that to the tumor. The problem that I see here is this red death, while it's traveling through your system in the carrier of the gold, it's not protected from the interaction of the heart. So that's what they point out in their investigation. They're looking at the toxicity of the system because at least in this quick, you know, I looked at this in this, you know, this is a cancer magazine. I looked at this study in here, and obviously this would be able to come in contact with the heart. So I don't know what their next step is, but that's why the liposome was kind of cool, because the liposome actually encapsulated this all, and that stuff was hidden in there. This is like inside out. So I didn't per se, you know, I don't know how effective this study is, but I'm presenting it here for, you know, I guess it's a good to take a look at this and actually define what we're doing. We're trying to hide this drug from the heart. In this example, at least the quick example that I'm showing here now, it doesn't hide it from the heart. So this would tend to be certainly toxic to both the patient's heart and the cancer cell. So I'm proposing this as, you know, an example of what doesn't work. Now, whether these people are going to make more progress on this or whatnot, I don't know. But I'm just doing it here for discussion. So in my presentations or in my class, I always like to present, you know, how do things work? And then I'd always like to present how do things not work. So in this example, I would have a hard time seeing how that this was selected from the heart muscle. I could see how it would be detrimental to the cancer, But I think it would also be detrimental to the rest of the system. And again, that's what you're trying to do is solve those problems in here. But those are some obvious problems that we should try to take a look at. So, you know, metal nanoparticles, you know, usefulness we already described before. I just like to reiterate, you know, how they're used. And, you know, so we would use quantum dots or plasmons, have a wide variety of applications by tagging, you know, DNA, RNA, proteins. We can tag or isolate organelles within a cell and stuff like that. So this allows us to do research and see how cells interact, how cells live, and et cetera. And so it's a nice way of doing it. And again, these metal nanoparticles or plasmons or quantum dots as plasmons or quantum dots, they're more effective because they actually have more light emission than conventional dyes. And dyes like to be bleached out per se and not last a long time. These quantum dots and plasmons have a longer lifetime. So this is an example, and we do this within the course. We generally have a project where we analyze lab on a chip for DNA, lab on a chip, so that it can actually isolate DNA defects, etc. So this shows DNA tagged with these gold nanoparticles, and the goal here would be we would have the DNA capture probe shown by this. This would be the unknown DNA of a patient. And then if this unknown DNA would have the right encoding, it would be able to hybridize at this specific site. And if it hybridized at that specific site and landed here, then this site would have the gold nanoparticle on there. When we would put this under a light source, we would be able to see that this patient had the complement to this specific DNA architecture, which might be something that's indicative of prostate or breast cancer, etc. So the patient could have this case here that might represent prostate cancer. We would write simply prostate cancer here. If it would hybridize here, then we would say that the patient, we could see, visually see, that the patient had this expression in their body for that particular defect that we're trying to define. So that's a popular thing. It can not only be used for DNA, but this could be used on a scale for proteins too. We could use the same type of scenario or algorithm to study proteins. We can also use not only, you know, for drug delivery, we can take a look at, which is rather famous and is presented in other parts of the course, but silver nanoparticles to prevent microbial infection. So that's really popular. They use these on Band-Aids and in you know, topical ointments and stuff like that. So what we're going to look at is the race for the surface. We could say, you know, in our scenario here, we're going to look at maybe a prosthetic device like a kneecap or something, or a knee that they're going to insert, or a hip into a body. And typically they might be made out of something like titanium. So what this study is let's take a look at if we would put silver nanoparticles on this prosthetic device and then place that in the body, how would that impact cellular growth and how would that impact microbial growth? So we have to analyze both. So there's a study on the next couple pages that we're going to take a look at. What they did is they varied the amount of silver that they're going to place on the prosthetic device. And this is the titanium without any silver nanoparticles on there. So that this type of Klebsiella microbe is going to grow it here at this normalized rate of 100. And then they have the staph is going to grow on the untreated prosthetic at the normalized value of 100. Then as they applied silver content, like here is 0.7, less than 1% silver content, what they were able to do is reduce this microbial growth down to maybe 70% of what it was on the untreated sample. And then as we go down, we look at 3%, we have something, I don't know, 38% microbial growth in this case. And then as we would increase the concentration of silver, actually the microbial growth would grow up. And then as we went to 9%, it would grow up to, you know, almost as much, you know, 85% or so as compared to the untreated sample. So if we were to look at this first iteration for this particular one type of microbe, we would certainly say that probably 3% is in about the best concentration to, you know, attenuate the growth of this microbe. Then if we would look at a different type of microbe, we would take a look at that. And then maybe the winner here might even be 9%. But I think what we have to do is average these. And again, I don't have the raw data and the actual numbers. I'm just guessing a number here on the side, you know. But, you know, if I average 3, that would look pretty good. I mean, 3 and 4 are about equal. So, you know, these two are really viable to cut back on the antimicrobial growth, you know. And then we might have to say, you know, what is the patient more susceptible to, this particular growth mechanism or this type of microbe, you know. So maybe that would make the decision. But it's clear that as we would vary the concentration, we would attenuate the microbial growth. Then we have to look at, which is certainly, you know, is a part of the same study, what we have to look at is, you know, what do the cells do? Now, when a cell sees this prosthetic device, and the prosthetic device made out of titanium has silver on it, how do the cells interact with that? So if we would take a look at this, and this is a study for a number of days on here, you know, what's important, you know, at day 3 or at day 10, you know, what do we want to have happen? And I would propose that, you know, probably what would be most important is to have really rapid cellular growth in the beginning, because then the we're not going to have any type of bone delamination or osteoblasts that are going to be cracked or fatigued or stress on the surface. So if I would look at, you know, the black the most, what the cellular activity being higher is better. If I would look at, you know, and this is protein absorption, which has a lot to do with cell absorption, but we're going to key on the graph up here. If we would look at initially, you know, the black thing, who would be the winner here? I would say we have the most cell growth in the beginning at 3%. What's nice, or something kind of to look at, let's look at cellular growth and the 9%. Those numbers are fantastic. And certainly really good, but we have to overlay them with this graph. So on this graph, the 9%, not so good. On this one, 9%, really good. But I really don't think that we could accept the amount of microbial infection with the 9%. We'd rather have 3. So based on these two graphs, and again, just for discussion, we have to compare it, and I'm just trying to, you know, teach that you have to look at multiple graphs and sometimes make some qualitative decision process. I would say if I were to be the patient and request from the doctor what I would like to have, I don't know. I think 3%, I'm just saying, looking at the immediate cell, I'd say 3% growing rather well in the beginning, and then the attenuation of the microbes, I think 3% might be the one that I would send to clinical trials and see how that works out for people. You know, I think that might be the best for us. So let's move on to our conclusion here for this note packet, which was Unit 5. So we split it up into 4 parts. The biological processes, certainly throughout the 4 parts of this presentation, set the scale and material processing needs. I think that's certainly true. Nanoparticles such as liposomes, gold nanoparticles, and nanoshells are of appropriate scale to interact on the cellular level. And then certainly biotech represents many career pathways that use nanotechnology scales, and I think that's important. So Certainly, I've seen over the years in teaching nanotechnology here at Penn State, the number of students that are from biotechnology has grown rapidly. And I think that's probably 50% of our students now that are interested in nanotechnology are going to use this, you know, as a tool to get a job and to participate in society. The biology is a key mover and doer in nanotechnology. So I hope this was informative. There's a lot of information on here. I think we set the groundwork that you can look up many more other techniques that I suggested, YouTube video links, etc. And I hope you enjoyed the presentation. Look forward to talking to you in other discussions here at the NAC Center at Penn State. Thanks.